Yo, BJ Gajor with the weekly BJ podcast. And today's episode is leg day 101. I'm going to share everything you need to know about building an incredible set of wheels. Also your ass. We're going to cover the lower leg, the upper leg, and the glutes because they're all connected. It's all part of a sound leg training program. And what's funny is that if you would have asked me 5 or 6 years ago, if I ever thought I'd become an expert or a source for leg training or leg goals or whatever you want to call it, I would have laughed because I've had a real hard time training my legs historically because of all the knee issues I had growing up. I had a decade-long battle with patellar tendinosis, chondromalacia, patellofemoral issues in general from like 14 to 24. I had 4 knee surgeries by the time I was 22, 2 on each knee, and the last 2 on my right knee pretty much ended my collegiate football career. I had the pleasure of watching the final homecoming game as a senior captain from the sideline because of the last injury I had. I mean, that final season really, really took its toll. I'll share this because, at the time recording this a couple days ago, Kevin Durant just ruptured his Achilles, and man, it messed me up. Just seeing anyone have to deal with such a brutal injury that, affects their career, but also potentially could put them in a situation that could end it or never allow them to come back the same, that really hits home with me. And if you are a former athlete and you did any sort of athletics for a long period of time, injuries are part of the game. And part of what I think is so great about sport is a lot of bad things can happen, right? You lose games that maybe you should have won. You get injured and you got to come back. It helps fortify you physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and it helps make you more resilient, especially, if you grew up in this country and we all have like such amazing comforts and an amazing life. And even our biggest problems are things that most people would actually hope to have those problems, right? Because, most people have a real hard time around the world. So it gives you a perspective and again, helps build this resilience, I think, that a lot of us miss out, typical Americans, that you can miss out if you have a good life, right? And sport pushes you competitively and working with others, et cetera. But, seeing that injury and, knowing that there was a risk in him coming back and he still did it for his team and hopefully he comes back the same player. If not, obviously he earned a lot of respect from people, but injuries are tough, man. And in a lot of cases too, especially as you become an adult and you enter the workforce, you don't have as much time or resources around you that you had when you were an athlete. You have a trainer on site, you have a strength and conditioning coach in some cases or both. And, when you are an adult, you have to now go get physical therapy and do a lot of the rehab and stuff on your own. And what people usually do is they just accept it. Okay, I just won't do those activities anymore. I'll work around it or, hope maybe I'll get it replaced or I'll just get an operation, etc. So, it hits home with me in a big way. And obviously this opened up a career path for me in fitness because I wanted to help people overcome, being overweight because that was a big struggle for me growing up. And also all the injuries, man, like I felt they really affected me. And when you're growing up and your identity is as an athlete and it's taken away from you, with something out of your control. And sometimes, by the way, in my control, I train like an idiot. A lot of my issues weren't like my knees weren't bad. It's just I abused them for so many years. And even at a young age, it catches up to you. And when I got that 4th and final surgery and the doctor told me that I had the cartilage damage of an 80-year-old and that I couldn't really do much with these ongoing, I'd have to really just avoid things like squats. Typically what they say, don't squat, don't run. Basically, don't be an athlete anymore. I know you're an athlete, but I'm going to ask you to stop being who you were and live the rest of your life that way. And it's humbling and it's depressing. And I've been there. So I quickly had to be confronted with that at a way younger age than you're supposed to. And still not even as bad as some of these pro athletes who have Mark Schlereth, I think 30 plus knee surgeries. I mean, some of these people literally use up all of their joint cycles, all of the quality of movement they had access to by the time they turn 30. And by the time they're in their early 40s, late 30s, joints have been replaced. And the wheelchair, unfortunately, or the cane is not far behind. And so if you're a younger person listening to this and you haven't put yourself through some of these injuries that are preventable, like overtraining, bad exercise selection, emphasizing load too much, we're going to touch on all this. I'm going to be talking about my favorite quad movements, hamstring movements, glute movements, calf movements, my top 5 leg day tips. And you'll leave this podcast with a real good blueprint to start building that lower body without destroying your back and your knees in particular. All right. So that's my main focus with this. And so as I left football and began that career in fitness, you know, I changed my training a lot, right? I wanted to get lean, look good, finally have abs. And I could still get really lean and look good without having to do, you know, the hardcore leg workouts I used to do. And I pretty much just trying to work around my legs. And I figured if I wear longer shorts, well, that doesn't work out, by the way, because I've very poor calf development. Team high calves, team no calves, whatever you want to call it. So eventually it was just, I'll just wear pants and I'll just get a really ripped upper body and really jacked upper body. And since that's what most guys want anyway, right? It's chest, abs, arms. Most guys really didn't care much about their legs unless they were true bodybuilders, right? Like the Men's Health audience, leg stuff never really pulled that much. And what I will say is over the past 5 years, now men are really starting to take their leg training seriously. Hopefully I've been a part of that. But a lot of other fitness pros and enthusiasts have been a part of it. And it's great because I say this all the time. Like if you want to change your body, whole body, focus on your legs, right? Not only does it have the majority of your muscle mass and potential metabolic benefits from building that area in terms of burning more calories at rest, but it just sets the tone. Most lower body movements, they are almost total body, right? Because if you're whatever position you're holding the weights or the load in on squats and lunges, you know, your whole upper body's involved, your core. So they just build everything. But, you know, you don't have to be the person who's stuck with powerlifting, squats, and deadlifts to do it. Not that those options can't be used and peppered in, but really what I had to focus on was, okay, am I just going to be that guy that has shitty legs and a really great upper body? And I did for a while, and especially when I was competing in some bodybuilding competitions, like I would lose because of my legs. And, you know, that sucks. And then when I started contributing to Men's Health, I remember how much shit people would talk about my legs. Like, yeah, guy's in shape, but like someone skipped leg day, right? It wouldn't just make fun of my calves. They would make fun of the whole legs. And that, you know, that obviously hit me in a way where I realized, okay, I've got to now, about 5 years ago, I'm like, I got to really step this up because I won't be able to take me seriously. And I have to also be honest with myself in that, you know, yes, I've done some incredible damage, but you know, I'm a pro at this. I know this shit. And if I really wanted to, and I dedicated myself to it, I could find a way to overcome it. And I've shared some testimonials of myself before. Like you can see what my legs looked like 5 years ago, what they look like today. It is without a doubt the most remarkable transformation my body has ever had. And now where my legs used to be like what people would make fun of me about, they are what people know me for. Like they follow me for leg training tips more than anything else. I'm literally about to launch a new line of apparel, and our flagship product is a short pair of shorts that highlights your legs for men who don't skip leg day. So it's just, again, it's another reminder, again, what you're going through right now, what's a struggle right now, what's a weakness right now, has the opportunity to become a strength and a huge opportunity for you down the road if you embrace the challenge and you do the best you can with what you've got. So I share that background because, again, like if I can find a way to get great results like that, knowing my own injuries and knee issues and stuff like that, I know this stuff can help you as well. And I know it has because I've gotten messages from thousands of people around the world have used these tips and it's like they're blown away. My Gorilla Corn Gains members in particular, they actually do my leg training protocols and they're blown away with how much of a change they're seeing in their quads, their glutes, and even their calves. My calf development has come a long way as well. You would not believe. I always joke, like, if you think my calves suck now, you should assume what they look like before I started training them, right? Because, you know, you start working around that stuff. So, again, a big focus there, too, is when you have an injury, you don't work through it, you work around it. But, again, eventually you can't overlook training the lower half of your body. We've got to find smart ways to do it. So, let me stress to you, I guess, the one moment, too, like, the critical moment where I was like, I got to start training my legs seriously. It was a Men's Health article, and someone posted a comment and said, someone skipped leg day and like 5,000 people liked that comment. So I'm not saying that like technically that's body shaming, right? But at the same time, like, you know, it is what it is, right? It's hard to take advice from someone when they don't look the part or they're talking about an area of their body that is undeveloped, even though they might know how to train it, right? I really know how to train my calves, but I actually still haven't even done a video about calf training really on my YouTube channel or anything else like that because I know they'll just talk shit about them because they don't look as good as they should. But a lot of that is genetic. And so again, take all this advice with a grain of salt. And but I will say, you know, this is tried and proven techniques to build your lower body. And if I can give five leg tips that I think would be like how I'd summarize the way I approach leg training today, it would be these. So number one, I take a time under tension and volume focus. We know that the fiber breakdown in your lower body is very mixed. It's a very good mix of fast and slow fibers. Your lower body has a lot more endurance than your upper body, and it makes sense because, again, we were designed to walk. So inherently, you know, the legs were meant to be able to carry us very long distances for a long period of time, but also sprint. So we have that makeup in our body. Everybody has a different fiber type makeup, by the way. When people ask me, like, what should I do for my hamstrings? Well, we know that hamstrings do lean a little more fast twitch, but you still want to do some slow twitch work. And again, the real philosophy on any muscle group today is that you want to use all rep ranges for maximum muscular development. You get all the fibers. So that goes with any of the movements, that, muscle groups we're talking about. And I'll talk about fiber twitch breakdown, whatever, wherever it applies. But You will find, and what I have found as someone who used to do just a lot of heavy work and really just overload the joints, I really started to see changes in my body when I just forgot about the load and I was doing longer duration sets, particularly for the lower body. Dramatic changes. I'm talking like, you know, 10-minute lunging and step-up protocols. You know, I've shared before the 10 reps every minute on the minute goblet squat protocol that I did for actually 30 minutes straight at one point. It was the worst workout I've ever done. And, you know, really just testing how far I could take it from a volume standpoint, which allowed me to not use as heavy of a load, right? Because again, you got to spare the joint, especially when there's already been damage there. But I did find that, especially with the lower body, emphasizing time under tension and getting a volume focus was really critical, especially for me with the knee pain. So if you have an issue with joint pain, you've got to understand that it really is no longer about ego, and it's now about, okay, what can I do now to avoid and or at least postpone a joint replacement for as long as possible and not be crippled at a young age and be able to enjoy your golden years. And that really is where the wake-up call, like the earlier it can happen for you, the better. Because once again, you wear through those joints, there's only so much you can do once there's wear and tear, right? And then now more and more modifications and substitutes have to get discussed. But time under tension means how long is that set lasting? The sets that I used to do would last like 10 to 20 seconds, you know, like very short, fast, explosive. I was actually, because I was doing things so fast and trying to come up and down really fast, I was emphasizing more, there was more stress in the joints and connective tissues and not as much on the muscles themselves. But when I started doing sets that lasted 30 to 60 seconds at least, and anywhere from up to 2 to 3 minutes sometimes, like that's when I'm like, holy shit, like my legs blew up. And as funny as it was, like, you know, it's like, it's not fun to share this because it looks a lot cooler to like squat 400 plus pounds or deadlift over 500 pounds and people like that stuff. But I wasn't seeing the same improvements in my muscles the way I would when I would do like some crazy body weight split squat protocols. And so I'm going to go through those today, but that is a game changer. And again, that you can't access those gains unless you start to get past the ego piece of this, which is difficult. But once you do, and you can see, and by volume, we mean, you know, higher repetitions, more sets, you know, again, that's also a way that you can see a lot of muscle gain without having to add a lot of load into the system. And again, since strength is no longer a main goal of mine, I still want to be strong, but I'm not looking to do a maximal squat or deadlift anymore at this point in my life. I just have no interest. It's not worth it. And frankly, you don't see the same type of muscle gain. So if we're looking just pure muscle gain and performance or pain-free gains, you know, time under tension and volume is key. You want those sets to last at least 30 to 60 seconds and tap into some longer duration work, 1 to 2 minutes plus as well. And you'll be blown away with how much more muscular development and endurance you can gain. And again, your joints will feel so good as well. Time under tension is awesome for your joints, for fortifying the joints. Number two, prioritize single leg moves. The beauty of split stance work, we're talking split squats, step-ups, lunges, Bulgarian split squats, is that because you're in that position, you automatically engage the inner and outer hips and thighs. So yes, you can do like the lying hip abductions and adductions to get your abductor hip muscles and the adductor groin muscles, or you can do that classic sex machine, you know, that you see at the gyms where people's legs are opening in and out, like again, I think if your goal is to isolate and build certain muscles, isolation movements have their place. But most people aren't trying to necessarily close the thigh gap. And you can work your abductors and adductors or inner outer hip thigh muscles without having to do those isolation movements. So that's just one thing to note. And again, a lot of us are short on time. You're trying to maximize your leg training. You want to prioritize single leg moves because of that. They really do. I mean, you're not only building and strengthening asymmetries between sides and some of strength, muscular development and mobility, but you're just engaging more musculature. You get more core recruitment and lighter loads go a longer way because, you know, you're also less loading on the spine and the knees. There's so many benefits to doing single leg movements. They are the core of what I do, at the core. Like literally single leg movements change my lower body. I've never felt better in terms of my knees and my back, and my legs have never been more symmetrical, proportionate, and developed as they are through single leg movements. I still do bilateral stuff, double-legged stuff, but it's more of an afterthought for me at this point. And especially if you're a taller individual, heavier individual, maybe don't have, really great ankle or hip mobility, bilateral loaded work is probably just never going to feel amazing to you. And you could spend years trying to figure it out and get squat shoes and wear wraps and wear a belt, but ultimately it still never feel right. And then you can find these single leg movements, like as much as they are challenging and like you can't use as much weight, man, are they effective for gains. So you got to really understand that. So prioritizing single leg moves. Number three would be reverse exercise order. So historically, people will say you want to do your really heavy bilateral double-legged works, your deadlifts, your squats first, and then you would finish off like a couple sets of some single-legged work to still be able to, offset any imbalances between sides, symmetry, etc., some more hypertrophy, higher rep work. But for me, it's been the exact opposite. I mean, I'll do high, medium, and low rep work for my single-leg stuff, but I will do unilateral first in most cases because I want to do the most important stuff when I'm most fresh and focused. We know that through research, the stuff you do earliest is the stuff you get the biggest return from. The stuff you save towards the end of the workout, you get the smallest return from. So, I always prioritize and do unilateral first, bilateral last, if at all. And what that also allows me to do is by the time I get to the bilateral work, because, you're fatigued from a lot of unilateral stuff, I don't need to use as heavy of loads to get a training effect from the bilateral work. And I'm also really warmed up. I've got all my key joints mobilized and prepped for bilateral work. And I just find that to be an amazing way to flow. So it means I would do my lunging and my split squatting and Bulgarian stuff first. And if I did do, front loaded squats, usually goblet style or double dumbbell kettlebell, or I'll use like the landmine options from some of the Pure Motion equipment I have access to, I'll do that later in the session. That's just how I do it now. And I've never seen better results and my joints have never felt better. My recovery has never been better. So most people don't treat something like a Bulgarian split squat as a core lift. They treat it as an accessory. But for me, it is a core lift. And by treating it that way and doing some really heavy loading in there, like, being able to, rep out with 90 or 100-pound dumbbells and doing some really crazy protocols on that. I mean, I've gotten way better muscle pumps, way better mind-muscle connection than I've ever gotten on double-legged or bilateral squatting. So, that's just something to consider. So that's a reverse exercise order. It goes against the norm, right? Again, this is part of what I've had to kind of create for myself to get the training effect I'm looking for while sparing my knees as much as possible. Number four, reverse loading. It's not just about the exercise order, but like, if I do heavy stuff, I don't do any heavy bilateral stuff really anymore. But I do go heavy. I'll tap into, the 3-6, 3-5, 4-6 rep range on split squats, lunges. And I do that because, again, as heavy as that load is, it's not going to be nearly as heavy to the system as something bilateral. So it ends up being easier to recover from. If you have minimal equipment setups, you don't need as much weight. And again, you still want to do some strength work because a stronger muscle has the ability to do higher loads, use higher loads at higher reps, which gives you that muscle building effect as well. And also, it has the potential to be a more powerful muscle. So strength is really the muscle quality that rules them all. But why would I want to overload my spine and knees if I can go heavy on single-legged stuff, which that split stance work, by the way, automatically puts your pelvis in a better position, a more neutral position, a safer position. And since the lumbar spine attaches to the pelvis, we're talking about your lower back being in a better position. And again, from the standpoint of the knees, because of the fact that, you know, split stance work really mobilizes the quads and the hip flexors, it really puts you in a position where now we're talking about mobility meets muscle and the pain for gains that your leg training should be all about. Because again, you know, there's just a greater risk with these lower body movements because of how much muscle mass is involved. And you know, moves like squats and deadlifts really can have catastrophic consequences. When I would miss a Bulgarian split squat, you know, like I can just set the dumbbells down from a kneeling position. When you get caught at the bottom of a squat, yeah, you can use the racks and the rails to help. But, you know, again, you see gym fuckery and how some terrible things can happen with those really heavy loaded movements. And I truly have seen that most people's bodies just aren't really suited for those types of movements. And if they are, they tend to be Olympic lifters and they just have really good levers, you know, advantageous leverage, limb length, that type of thing. But even if you don't use all the advice I have in this, you know, you can take whatever you want and apply it to your leg training. If you find your body responds well to bilateral squats and heavy squatting and deadlifting, you know, do it. Do it at your own risk. And as long as you can do it competently and you're not feeling pain, you know, that's great. But you still want to work some of this stuff into the equation and at least have an exit strategy for yourself as you get older. Because again, once you start entering your 30s, as someone who's 36, I can already tell you, like, I just don't have the desire to put my body through the masochistic stuff I used to do. And I also know the smallest dose needed to get the results I'm looking for. And I don't want to overload my system any more than I have to, because I want to be able to do this for a very long time. I don't want to cost myself any more than cost myself as a young idiot meat stick, you know, not listening to my body, pushing through pain and getting the load that I'm after at all costs, especially to the joints. So heavy unilateral stuff, or if it was heavy, it would be unilateral, and I would do that first, and then I would do the lighter work. I would still do light work for unilateral stuff, but I would only do bilateral stuff that would be lighter loaded, meaning we're talking typically like 10 plus reps, right? So in that way, like bilateral work is great. Again, especially minimal equipment setups, I don't need a lot of weight to benefit from to be able to do, you know, light stuff. Like I can take that 100-pound dumbbell and just do really high rep goblet squats and get an amazing workout. Also get a cardiometabolic effect. So what I found is I would start to use still safer exercise selection. I'm not doing barbell squatting. I would do, you know, the front loaded options we talked about, or I could do swings instead of heavy deadlifts, you know, and still train fast switch fibers without as with much less load coming through the spine. And use that for more the cardiometabolic fat loss protocols, finishers, and I found, wow, like I can not only recover faster, but now I've got a great conditioning option in place, and I'm still getting the blend of strength and stamina that I'm looking for. So again, like reverse loading, heavy unilateral, light bilateral, but ultimately I did heavy, medium, and light single-sided stuff because, again, I want to fully develop all the fibers in the muscle. The fifth one, I will say, this has kind of been an X factor. And again, you don't have to do any of this stuff if you don't feel like it resonates with you. But blood flow restriction training was a game changer for me. And there's a lot of research on this. I've written an article on this before. You can search BJ Goddard blood flow restriction, and you'll find a nice article breaking it down and the research on it. And I was originally intrigued by it because I noticed, I saw a special on how they were using BFR, blood flow restriction training protocols, for wounded warriors, veterans, amputees, people in really intensive rehab settings, because they found with loads as light as 20 to 30% of one rep max, like we're talking stuff you could do like 25 to 50 plus reps with, similar gains in muscle and strength with much less stress on the joints. Because again, that's what you need access to in rehabilitation protocols. And what you're doing basically, if we're talking about the lower body, if 10 is the tightest you can wrap it, you're using wraps. It could be ACE bandages. It could be, I use Voodoo Floss wraps from the Mobility Wad site or Rogue Fitness. There's even like special cuffs you can put on. But basically, you're wrapping right beneath the gluteal fold a 7 out of 10 on that tightness scale. You wrap your legs tighter than you would your arms. Your arms, you do about a 5 in terms of what most expert recommendations are. For the legs, it would be 7 out of 10. And what that's doing is, it's allowing blood to flow into the muscle, but it's not allowing the blood to leave. So you're trapping blood into the area. It makes it harder to get oxygen into the area. And what happens then is that the slow twitch fibers fatigue faster than normal, which makes you have to tap into your fast twitch fibers more quickly, again, with much lighter loads and much less joint stress. So there's more metabolic waste, more acidosis in the muscles, more of that burning. There's cellular swelling. There's just really key muscle gain hypertrophy type situations that you can create with blood flow restriction training with just crazy light loads. So I started playing around with that stuff. I'm like, wow, this is amazing because I can not only get some more training in, but I can do so and get all this blood to my joints and my muscles with very low impact and very low joint stress. So it just became a really interesting thing that I found. Again, I have this fascination with how can I get people these results at home with minimal equipment or lighter loads. And blood flow restriction training became a staple of it. And we use it, I use it in the original Metastride Extreme program. That's no longer available, by the way, for those interested. Don't do any of the Metastride products anymore. I'm not involved with that company. And I think they even stopped selling them in some ways. And it's dated material. So all my latest and greatest stuff in terms of building muscle is at GorillaCornGains.com. The exact plan I follow, particularly the leg stuff, is just, they're game-changing stuff. And so those are the top five leg day tips. I'll remind you again on them. Number one, time under tension and volume focus. Number two, prioritizing single leg movements. Number three, a reverse exercise order where I emphasize unilateral first, bilateral last, reverse loading. Any heavy work I do is single-sided. And I tend to do, if I do bilateral work, it tends to be light and always at the end of the session or later in the session. And then blood flow restriction training has been a game changer, not just for the thighs, but also like, because I don't have at home, even in the Garden of Gains or my Garage of Gains, you know, loaded calf machines. I have a seated calf raise machine that I use, but I don't have like a standing calf machine or a leg press where you can do leg press calf raises or a donkey calf raise machine. So I've found like some insane calf building protocols that have really added some serious mass to my lower legs without any sort of load by using the blood flow restriction technique. You're again wrapping the top of the thigh right underneath the butt cheek. And I'll talk more about some of those protocols later, but it's just been a game changer. The last thing I'll add to that, kind of a bonus tip, when I structure a lot of the workouts I do for my legs, I tend to flow the movements from an ankle to hip to knee order. So I always start with calf work, not only because it's a weakness for me and you want to do it when you're most fresh and focused, but it mobilizes the ankle joint. And a more mobile ankle joint will make squats, deadlifts, hip hinges, all those types of big mass building lower body movements better, because you know that the restriction at the ankle joint can really not only cause knee pain but put you in bad positions on those main movements. So the hip movements are then great because you can mobilize the glutes and the hip flexors, the adductors in some cases. It also activates the glutes so that you know you're putting your body in the best position to use the heaviest loads you can handle, prevents back pain, etc. And then by the time I get to more of the knee dominant stuff, the squatting, the lunging, because my ankle and hip joints are so warm, I get better movements, and it just kind of greases the groove. Again, I don't seem to have to always apply that rule, but like when I structure a lot of our Gorilla Corn workouts, typically from ankle to hip to knee, I find just it's a great flow for really productive workouts, great training effects, and really great for the joints. So that's just one extra tip I'll throw in there. So let's talk quads, right? I have, and you can check the show notes, I've done a top 10 exercise video on YouTube for the quads, the hamstrings, and the glutes separately. Three unique videos on that. You can check out my YouTube channel, youtube.com/BJGador. The show notes will have links to that, direct links for each of these videos. So I kind of show the 10 movements. I talk about them, coach and demo. I highly recommend you check those out if you want to really dig deep into these and see these, because some of these movements are hard to describe, you know, in audio, but again, I wanted to go over principles and methods today as the main focus. You want the visuals, check out YouTube. So the quads. The quads are most active on knee extension and hip flexion movement. So knee extension is going to be leg extensions, okay, which are not necessarily a bad exercise, all about how you do them and what you're trying to get out of them, what load you use, technique, etc., and hip flexion movement. So you have a middle quad muscle, the rectus femoris muscle, that is also hip flexor. So if you want to really develop the middle quad, and that gives you that nice peak at the top of the leg from that side view, adding in some isolated hip flexion movements like I love doing them laying on the ground with the band around my foot and pulling my knee to the chest, any sort of leg knee raises, target those directly. Lifting your leg up onto a box will also engage those hip flexor quad muscles on step-ups. And those are excellent as well. And one thing that I would say, one of the reasons I love the Bulgarian split squat is because it's not just what happened in the front leg. When you are doing that, elevating that rear leg, so Bulgarian split squat or rear foot elevated split squat, putting that back leg onto a box, bench, chair, couch, ottoman, there is a stretch under load that is happening to that hip flexor, that middle quad muscle, and the trail leg. And I found that part of the reason I have, in particular, I found like really good development on the top of my quad that gives you that great quad sweep from the side is because of what happens to the trail leg on Bulgarian split squat. So by stretching that muscle under load, that hip flexor, that mid quad, not only the higher hip flexors, but that lower hip flexor that's in the middle of that quad, you can see some crazy gains in your legs, and again, with much lighter loads. And I'm just blown away. I wish I had known this when I was younger, because it could have saved me a lot of pain, a lot of surgeries, and my legs would be even bigger now than they are. So hopefully you can find those results and that success that I couldn't, at least earlier on in my life. So consider that. Any squat in your lunging is really, those are your key. I mean, if you want to break it down to like three things, squatting, lunging, and leg extensions. You know, we know through the research that if you want to absolutely maximally develop a muscle group, some isolated single joint work is highly effective. And again, I wouldn't use leg extensions as a heavy strength exercise. It's more of a carver, a sculptor, a mind-muscle connection type situation, higher rep, shorter rest periods, more metabolic stress, where you're really trying to go laser focus on the muscle group. And the one thing I'll say is I don't like a lot of leg extension machines. My favorite one was the Kaiser air-operated leg extension. That one was so good. And I could actually adjust it via a button that would, with air, go high or low. I could do drop sets instantly with it. I could measure my power output and also allow the legs to go independently, and they were separate. So you could, even when you're doing both legs at the same time, they were independently loaded. So you could really work out asymmetry simultaneously to developing and building muscle in that area. So, but most people don't have access to that. I just mentioned, you know, the Kaiser air-operated leg extension machine was my favorite of all time. I currently have no access to any sort of leg extension at home in my garage or backyard gym. So I haven't done them in a couple years. I have done them at some points in my life, but you can still make gains without them, especially if you use the exercise that I talk about. And, knee extension, my top knee extension movements are squats, front-loaded squats in particular. The more vertical your trunk, as you can achieve through front-loaded options, holding weight to shoulder level, the more quad stress. So, you know, the back squats will tend to get you more glute ham recruitment because you can hinge more at the hip and get more of a forward trunk position. But if you're really trying to target the quads, you want to be as upright as possible with the trunk. Vertical trunk positioning is what gets the quads most directly targeted. Also, in the case of something like, and this is very counterintuitive because for so long we have been told like you never want your knees to come forward. It's bad for your knees. What's bad for your knees is putting your knees forward with too heavy of a load, right? It's really just doing things that are too fast or too heavy for your current mobility and strength limitations. That's what it all comes down to. There really aren't necessarily bad movements. It's bad exercise selection, overloading, doing things too fast without intention or focus on form and technique. So part of what I had to do in my rehabilitation is finding ways to allow my knee to travel forward while keeping my foot flat on things like squats and lunges and split squats without pain. And then by being able to do that, I've noticed incredible gains in my lower body and also more in my calves too. The more I can get that ankle moving, the better for your lower leg. But in particular, if you want to build your quads and you have bad ankle mobility, it's going to be really hard because you're not going to be able to create the joint angles that are going to maximally stress the quads. So again, it's all related, and that's why you still want to do some direct ankle training, because I feel like if you want a really good ankle mobility, you've got to work your calves directly. So we'll talk more about the calves towards the end here. But you know, the full list I have at the YouTube section, but I'm just kind of giving highlights here. I love lunges. I love front-loaded squats. From the hip flexion standpoint, I mentioned that. You get the back of the leg in that case, on Bulgarian split squats in particular, split squats in general. And then you can work on some things like, you know, banded or weighted hip flexions, either single leg or double leg or leg raises. I will say, like, cycling, biking, amazing for quad development. Really, like, you know, it's just one of those things that, you know, I think is just so good for building the quads, helping with knee health. Again, as long as you're doing glute hamstring training, so you're not so quad dominant. But, you know, I've always found my knees have always felt best when I do some regular biking, you know, almost weekly, you know, some weekly work on the fan bike. I have the Erdyne fan bike, but whatever you have access to, it's a game changer for quad development, particularly your lower quads, which are very important knee stabilizers, the VMO, lower teardrop muscles in particular. I also like sled pushes. Backward sled dragging in particular is amazing for your lower quad VMO muscles. Backward uphill walking as well, great for quad development. So there's lots of ways you can kind of sneak this stuff in using the environment, some outdoor workouts. If I had to pick a single movement to build the quads, and it still works your glutes and your glutes a lot, hamstrings a little bit depending on your holding position, but Bulgarian split squats is my number one quad exercise, in particular with a closer stance, with the foot closer to the bench, so I have more of a forward knee angle, and off, while being front-loaded, meaning holding at shoulder level and a really vertical trunk, maximum quad growth will be achieved through that, both, by the way, front and back leg with Bulgarian split squats. I'm just telling you right now, I just think it's incredible with very little stress in the back and the knees, with built-in mobility work as well, and something that where lighter loads can go a longer way, and you can always get a training effect no matter where you are. And I'll do heavy work there. I'll do some really high rep work, you know, 2 to 3 minute sets with slower tempos, constant tension stimulus. I also really like blood flow restriction body weight Bulgarian split squats, where I'll set the clock for 3 to 5 minutes with the wraps on and get as many reps as I can, rest pausing for 5 or 10 seconds as needed, or like a 40 on 20 off protocol for 3 to 5 straight minutes, like, and then you switch sides after resting a couple minutes, like some of the best pumps you'll ever experience with like no stress in the joints. But there's a complete list, and I show all the movements, my top 10 favorite at the time when I did the video. You can check them out. But that's how to build the quads. And again, if you had to pick one, again, just to recap, you know, the quads are active on knee extension movements and hip flexion movements. If I had to pick a machine that would be great to add in, or cardio equipment, it would be cycling, biking. Don't overlook sled pushing and dragging. Uphill walking, particularly backwards, is phenomenal as well. And also very low stress on the joints. But the single best movement for the quads, the Bulgarian split squat, in my honest opinion. Hamstrings, maybe the muscle group I've become most known for. And a lot of, there obviously is a genetic component going on where I have advantageous levers for hamstring development. But again, part of the reason my hamstrings, by the way, like people will say like great hamstrings, but if you look at my quad hamstring ratio, they're like the exact, you know, they have the ideal proportion where my quads look like the upside down version of my hamstrings. Like there's the same size beneath the thigh as there is above the thigh bone. They look identical, but you know, I guess because most people will have good quads and not the best hamstrings, most people leg and hamstring development. So it might just look, it might just stand out more, but they're actually symmetrical in that way. You know, the top and bottom of my thigh are like the exact same size, but I've become known for the hamstrings. And part of that is because with all the knee issues I've had, in most cases, I've had limited motion at my ankles and knees. So I wasn't able to do really deep knee bending stuff. And I've had really poor ankle mobility historically. It's gotten so much better, but it'll never be a huge strength of mine from all those years of compensations and restriction. So I became really more of a hinger than a squatter. So even just, you don't realize how much this adds up, just like normal day-to-day activities, like I would hinge over to pick things up. I wouldn't squat down to get them. And so by doing all that hinging, I think I really shifted things in terms of making my hamstrings more developed than they would be otherwise. So that's just something to consider. There's a genetic component. There's also your injury history and movement history plays a role as well. If I wasn't such a hinger and compensating, like my entire final season of football in college, I could barely bend the knee. So I had to find a way to hinge my way through a football season. So yeah, I think the hamstrings really got called upon in a way that most people would never have them called upon. So that might be part of where the development comes from. But again, you can see even 5 years ago, and that was way past my playing days. You know, I was 5 years ago, you know, 30, 31. I've been done with football for 8 years. at that point. And the amount of hamstring gains I've made in the past 5 years have been incredible. And it's been using these protocols. So the key to building your hamstring is to perform an eclectic mix of knee flexion movements, like straight leg curls, moving only at the knee, pulling the heel towards the butt, and hip extension movements. We're talking those hip hinging patterns to work both the low and high hamstrings. Moves like the stability ball or rolling or sliding leg curl kill two birds with one stone because you're training knee flexion while maintaining hip extension, making it the most important move to do if you had to pick one. So again, like my favorite one is any sort of rolling, sliding, or a stability ball. You can use slide boards or sliders. Some call it shelk or stability ball, hip extension, leg curl, whatever you want to call it. But by isometrically holding the hip extension position and then emphasizing knee flexion, holding that position, you work both the high and low hamstrings. It's also like almost no loading on the spine. And when you do them, there's lots of ways to load those up, by the way, but also doing them single-legged, like the best hamstring movement that almost anyone can access. And it's so good for mobility and knee health as well. So those are my favorites. And you'll see in the video, if you reference this on YouTube, there's a device called the glute ham developer or glute ham roller from Sorenex, and you can actually anchor bands or cables to that and do leg curls with band or cable tension. So you can load that knee flexion. I also will do sometimes rolling, sliding leg curls with weight around my hips, either dumbbell, sandbags, or even chains, or sometimes band tension if I want to overload the hip extension portion to make it feel more challenging. You can slow the tempo down. I love blood flow restriction leg curls. One of the protocols in Grillicorn Gains that we've used recently was 3 minutes of blood flow restriction leg curls. And you know, you start out doing higher reps, and then because again, you get fatigued a lot faster than normal and the blood can't leave and just can't get oxygen there as much as you would normally, it makes those fast twitch fibers kick in a lot harder and the pumps are off the charts. I love those for developing the hamstrings. So if you had to pick one, lots of great options for that. I do really like, we talk about hip thrusts, a foot elevated hip thrust, both on one and two legs will also prioritize hamstring development. I'm a big fan of that. I love hip hinges. And I've done heavy hip hinges, obviously, very heavy stiff legged deadlifts. And I, as much as possible, what I tell people is instead of doing deadlifts, just do really front-loaded vertical trunk positioned squatting lunging for your quads. And if you want to really get your hamstrings maximally developed, the high hamstrings in particular, just do hip hinges or stiff-legged deadlifts. We're only moving through the hip. It's going to allow a lighter load to go a longer way, less spinal stress, and then you're more, because the quads can't assist, you're really laser focusing on the high hamstrings, also some glute because it's hip extension. And you can do it in a way that I just think is much more accessible, easier to learn. There's much more skill involved with a deadlift, conventional or sumo, where you're moving both at the knee, hip, all through knee, hip, and ankle joints versus just isolating the hip extension movement. Again, the load, people say, well, you can use heavier loads on regular deadlifts. Yeah, but you're also using the heavier loads because you're involving more muscle groups. So why not, if your goal is to build your hamstrings, and you will build them, the high hamstrings with hip hinging, it doesn't matter that you can do more weight with a regular deadlift because what is the function of the muscle we're trying to work, right? That's where you can kind of lose yourself in a lot of this stuff, where it's like all that matters is the absolute load. No, I mean, like, that's why curls are so effective for the biceps. Like, yeah, chin-ups are awesome and they're a great mass builder for the biceps, but because you involve your back, you're not going to be able to get the same level mind-muscle connection and focus in the biceps as a bicep curl, which is why you want to do both. But especially from a safety standpoint, I think hip hinges are a lot safer. There's a smaller learning curve, especially when using tools like a deadlift, etc. And I showed my favorite hip hinging options as well in that video if you want to check out more. The quads, by the way, are very mixed, slow, fast fibers. So you want to do a good mix of high and low reps. The quads really do respond to high rep work. And I've tested that with, you know, cycling, long duration squatting, lunging, etc. Hamstrings do lean a little more fast twitch fiber. So that's one thing to consider. You know, you tap into some lower 3 to 6 rep work on hinges, or even, you know, resisted sliding, rolling leg curls are excellent. But you also want to do a good amount of medium rep work and some occasional higher rep work, where I'll do some like band seated leg curls or band lion leg curls, and I'll try to get 100 reps in as few sets as possible. Yeah, that's an amazing pump. That's also a great warm-up, by the way, if you're someone who is prone to hamstring injuries or needs more work in that area or wants to warm them up and give your knees some more stability and support on squats to come. Flooding the hamstrings with blood actually makes squats and lunges feel better on the knees, which is why, again, I talk about that ankle, hip, knee flow and the way I order my exercises and my leg workouts. I find that helps a ton. But again, like any muscle group, you want to use all loads, all rep ranges. And, you know, I am a big fan also of glute ham raises or Nordic Russian leg curls. And you've probably seen like people post this on, you know, ESPN or SportsCenter social media accounts, like some great athletes doing them. It's basically like it's a bodyweight leg curl. Again, you check out the video to see it. I show it in action. But the issue with that is you need some equipment that or someone to hold your feet down in most cases. And it's very, very challenging and can cause a lot of muscle damage and soreness. You got to be very progressive with it. But that is also great movement. But, you know, the staples really for me are sliding, rolling leg curls and hip hinging with dumbbells or landmine attachments, etc. And you'll find crazy hamstring development with those options. And if you can build up to the Nordic Russian leg curls, those are also great. You got to just be very progressive and careful because they do really stretch that muscle under load. So they could potentially strain them if you go too hard too fast. But in most cases too, your body will like, that's why when people do them for the first time, they tend to just like collapse because your body's good at protecting itself and it will actually inhibit you from even using muscles that could cause a strain in cases because it's so much load and it takes a lot of strength and time to build up to those. But if you have access to a glute ham developer or a machine for Russian or Nordic leg curls, you know, that one is excellent for the knee flexors and even the upper calves. But again, if I had to pick one, like I said, I'd pick one quad, it would be Bulgarian split squats. If I had to pick one hamstring, sliding or rolling leg curls, because you work both functions of the hamstrings, the high and low hamstring, the knee flexion and the hip extension. Glutes. So I don't want to spend too much time on glutes because if you want to learn about the glutes, follow Brett, the glute guy at Contreras. He knows all this stuff like the back of his hand. He's dedicated his life to this, researching it, etc. But the glute complex consists of the glute max, minimus, and medius. You've got to train the glutes from all angles and force vectors for complete development. This includes vertical-based movements like squats and hip hinges. So again, like on your quad and hamstring work, you're going to also get the glutes in that process too. But you want to add in also some isolated horizontal movements like hip thrusts. Like hip thrust is the best glute movement, period. If I had to pick one, it would be the single leg hip thrust with your shoulders elevated. That's going to get, in my opinion, the best glute pump ever. Zero spinal stress. So good. I'll talk. One of my favorite protocols right now we're doing in Gorilla Core and Gains, using either chain, sandbag, or dumbbells loaded. You do a heavy loaded hip thrust for minute one. It's 3 minutes on one leg, taking short 5 to 15 second pauses between loads. But you start with a heavier load for max reps, like typically 10 to 15. Then you go to lighter load for 10 to 15 reps. In the second minute, the third minute, it's just like as many body reps as you can get. You rest a minute, do the other side. The best glute pump of your life. Again, no stress in your spine. You'll be blown away. It also mobilizes the hip flexors. And you get a little bit of quad work there too, but amazing for the glutes. But you want to do horizontal movements and also lateral movements like hip walks or skater jumps and rotational stuff like hip abductions, either seated or standing. You know, these are the money moves to combine multiple force vectors. These are all the moves you want to do, but there are also some key movements that can combine multiple force vectors into one. A lot of times I'll do, like, for example, doing hip hinges, which is more of a vertical based movement, by adding a band resistance around your hips as you do it, adds horizontal resistance into that vertical based movement. So you actually can get multiple things going on at once. You want to reference the videos on this as well because it really shows them. But that's the really, like, if you want to really build your glutes, you've got to add in some big bands and some mini bands to really get those unique vectors you can't access with just dead weight. So, you know, I love step ups, especially with like a slow 5 second lowering. Great for the glutes. Single leg hip thrusts are my favorites. If you want more glute on Bulgarian split squats, you take a longer stance with the leg more out in front of your body, more of a vertical shin positioning. Anytime you go more vertical shin, you're going to get more glute and hamstring stress on your leg days. Just consider that. But you still want to do some of the Jane Fonda stuff, right? Like for higher reps, metabolic stress, warm-ups, activation, corrective, hip walks, clamshells, Again, you can reference the video for that. The one thing that's not in the video that I made for this because I don't have access to it currently that I really do like for glutes is the rounded back extension that I got from Brett Contreras, the glute guy as well, where you round out your upper back to create more of a posterior pelvic tilt, which maximizes glute activation on ideally a 45-degree reverse hyper or back extension machine. And I've gotten some of the most amazing glute pumps of my life on that, loaded body weight, just insane pumps. I might actually end up getting one of those from my home gym at some point. But if you're going to use any machine that isn't a hip thruster for the glutes, rounded back extensions are phenomenal. Just Google rounded back extension. You'll see most likely Brett Contreras show you how to do it. But that is an honorable mention one for sure. I also like, I mentioned skater jumps, great lateral movement for power and endurance, metabolic stress. Adding mini bands with that, I love, because you actually get resistance going out. Really smokes the glutes. And I like the slide board as well. Doing, like, if you actually have a slide board itself with the wooden ramps, you can kind of push off with your feet. Insane glute workout. Also gets the low quads and VMOs really well, but easy on the joints and back. But you know, you get the whole glute complex with doing movements that are vertical, horizontal, and lateral rotational. You don't have to do that in every single workout, but every month you want to be doing movements that hit all those unique angles. So let's finish off with the calves here, and then I'll kind of leave some closing thoughts. In terms of calf anatomy, right, you've got your upper calves, high calves, the gastrocs, gastrocnemius muscles. Those tend to be pretty mixed, fast and slow twitch fibers, so you want to do some heavier work for sure in a 6 to 8, 8 to 12 range, but then also some really good higher rep work. Then you've got your lower calves, soleus muscles, which are, in most cases, like nearly 90% slow twitch fibers, meaning they really only respond well to, you know, high rep, like 10 plus rep work, and also like super high rep, like 25 to 50 plus, even 100 rep sets, and you want to blow them up that way. There's three main movements for calf training. So straight-legged calf work is going to get more gastroc. You'll still get some soleus recruitment, but if you want to really maximize the soleus, you've got to do bent-legged options. And I still like, I do like some single-leg bent knee. Again, ideally, the legs should be bent about 90 degrees, which is what it will be on a seated calf raise machine. I still have not found a better option for training the soleus than the seated calf raise machine, which is why it's the one like machine I have in my gym. I got by the way, all my equipment is at gardenofgains.com, including the seated calf raise machine I have that I got. That's only a couple $100 and it's very sturdy and it works well. But my go-to calf developer is the one-leg calf raise because, again, lighter loads go a longer way. You strengthen the asymmetries between sides. You get great ankle mobility benefits and great pumps and mind-muscle connections. It travels well. I love it. Also working in things like shin raises are great, or inclined walking will also get your shins. Again, you want to keep the opposing muscles as balanced as possible. Part of why you want to do the hip flexion, by the way, in developing the quads is it's the opposing muscle group of the glutes. You never want any muscle to not get enough love, right? Because it creates imbalances. So opposing muscles need to get, if not an equal amount of love, at least similar amounts of love. And so you've got seated calf raises for the soleus, standing calf raises with your legs straight for the gastrocs, and also donkey calf raises or leg press calf raises. And the leg press calf raise basically mimics the donkey calf raise where your hips are hinged, or your body, your legs and trunk form a 90-degree angle, which is maximizing the stretch on your calves, on your upper calves in particular, like particularly right behind the knee there, that real high calf area. And I'll do a lot of that stuff. And you can load that up by putting, you've seen like Arnold doing the videos with women on his back. I've had my wife jump on my back for donkey calf raises at times. But oftentimes I'll do them either for super high reps or using blood flow restriction protocols with just my body weight. And I get amazing pumps, crazy pumps. And what I will say is like I've seen some insane body weight calf development with blood flow restriction training. Because again, it allows you to get into the fast twitch fibers quicker. It makes light loads go a long way. And, you know, again, I'll do like 3-minute sets of, you know, one of our favorite stacks using Grillicorn Gains. I'll do, you know, 90 seconds of body weight donkey calf raises, which is kind of a weaker position, that stretch position. Then I'll do another 90 seconds right away of standing calf raises. And it feels like I've got 1,000 pounds on my shoulders while I'm doing that because of that pre-fatigue from the donkey, and also combining it with blood flow restriction training. It's just off the charts. I will say what I've noticed, I've also noticed some significant calf development or changes in my calves since I started boxing because of all the bouncing you do on your toes. You got to stand your toes and be able to pivot and rotate and add the footwork. Combining that with the Gorilla Corn Gain style of calf training that I do, my calves have never been bigger, more developed, particularly the lower calf soleus muscle, which is critical. And beyond wanting, like, again, like, even if you're someone with, like, disadvantageous calf genetics, like, if the calf, if you have high calves, right, meaning that the upper calf just has a very high insertion, like, around the knee, they're never going to be huge. They're never going to be bodybuilding calves. You just, like, make them really cut. They'll end up looking like small butts. But they'll grow. It just, you have to consider, they're never going to look amazing. What I will say is people that are really athletic, fast, quick, you look at basketball players, sprinters, they have high calves. They don't have like bodybuilder calves. Bodybuilder calves, they tend to just be people that have the upper calf just like insert really low down the leg. So they just have greater mass and more potential in those areas. But what I will say is a lot of those people aren't the fastest. They don't really necessarily jump the highest. There's also more weight down there, which makes them, you know, not as athletic in some cases. So again, there's pros and cons to all of this. You know, people that tend to be the most athletic don't have necessarily the best looking calves. They might look shredded and really, you know, lean, good muscle separation, but not the mass that you would see in like a bodybuilding competitor or someone with really great calf genetics. So just consider that. If I had to pick a single calf raise movement, it would be the one leg calf raise, because you can actually do the one leg calf raise with your leg straight for more upper calf, with the leg as with bent as much as possible to get a little more soleus recruitment, and also from a hinge position bent over in a donkey position to really get the stretch portion. And then what I will say is beyond the blood flow restriction option, using intraset stretching has been a game changer for my calf development. Meaning if I'm doing like really high rep stuff, or instead of resting sometimes, I'll rest while staying in the stretch position. So you always want to do it off an extended platform, a low box or a step, the edge of an incline bench, because you want to get it, it's critical to get the stretch if you want to maximize calf development and also ankle mobility. But I'll rest in the stretch position, or I'll pause in the stretch position to keep more blood in there, get more cellular cellular swelling, keep the muscle on tension. Then I'll keep going in that fashion. So you'll notice the best pumps of your life, also the most improvements in your ankle mobility ever. So again, if you struggle with calf development, look at it as, okay, ankle mobility is key for all athletic performance, running, jumping, squatting, lunging, also for knee health. So I'm doing it for that. And then eventually, if you do it for a long enough period of time, you'll see the calf gains as well. So this was a quick like 1 hour of me like breaking down all my leg training tips, how to approach all the key muscle groups. I hope this helped. Please reference the show notes so you can see videos of me showing my top 10 quad, hamstring, and glute movements. I'll eventually get one up there for the calves as well at some point. But I will tell you this, if you follow these strategies, even if you have back and knee issues or other issues along the way, you can get crazy leg gains. Again, but it's not about load. That's the biggest thing that, especially with the legs, you have to get around, is it's not about the load. It's about finding the best movements for your body that work with your body, not against it, using more time under tension, more volume, smarter exercise selection, prioritizing single leg movements. And once you know the anatomy piece, okay, if these are the movements I have to do, let me find the safest, most accessible movements I can do on a regular basis, where lighter loads go a longer way, where there's pain-free gains, where there's a lower risk and higher return. And that's when you'll start seeing some big changes. But keep in mind, like any muscle group, it took me 3 to 5 years of really dedicated leg training to create a transformation where it's like, holy shit, like this guy's legs blew up. You can see gains in 3 to 6 weeks, 3 to 6 months, but like we're talking like a different set of wheels, a set of wheels that like you'd want to put short shorts in. You know, that's going to take 3 to 5 years. So you got to be patient. If you're looking for the exact protocols I use and follow and help other men get crazy leg gains, you can join my online coaching group and follow my exact training plan at GorillaCornGains.com. Check out the YouTube videos. And if you have a set of wheels you want to show off from all your hard work, I've created the ideal shorts, the perfect fit for men who don't skip leg day. Go to sleevessoldseparately.com. You can be notified as soon as my new line of shorts will launch. Other clothing will come, including a longer short, a muscle tank, a muscle tee, I'm sorry, sleeveless hoodies, all that good stuff. But the short shorts are coming soon. The Lungeman shorts will follow that. I hope this helps, guys. I love you guys. A 5-star rating and review is appreciated. If you dig it, it helps me spread the word to more good people like you. Love you. Peace.